I just thought to share a few thoughts with you from the scriptures as a kind of a message that really focuses on the real issue at play now in these last days. And the real issue at play is surprising to a lot of people, and yet at the same time, not so very surprising. People are realizing that, you know, the truth is not just to be taken for granted by those as a given from those that we have learned to trust. We have to search for ourselves. And when we search for ourselves, we make a stand for the truth. Many times that will come at a cost. That's really the subject matter we want to discuss, the lead up to the subject matter we want to discuss today. Because, brothers and sisters, Jesus is preparing us for serious times ahead of us. The ride is going to get rough, so to speak, if you want to put it in layman's terms that way. And some of us have gone through a hard time. Some of you might have gone through a rough time. Guess what? There is an even rougher, harder time that is coming. The Bible actually describes it as a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation. I want to introduce it by a story that is familiar to you. Let me put the screen on here. Is the title of what we're going to talk about. And the story is the story of the blind man. This blind man that Jesus encountered when he was walking with his disciples one day is recorded in John 9. Here it is, first three verses. And as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, "Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "Neither this man sinned nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him." So here's the circumstance, familiar with the story. What condition was this man, what was the cause of the condition for this man to be that way? That's the question. What caused this man to be blind? He was in a condition that is a negative condition, a disadvantaged condition. And the question that the disciples were asking was in relation to his lineage, his heritage. Did his parents do something? Did he do something? And the answer to the question, Jesus answered and says, it's not him and it's not his parents. And he stops there. And then he says, he takes it to a positive note. He says, the works of God should be manifest in him. That's the purpose. And then he heals him, and we're going to explore that a little bit. But the answer that Jesus stopped, they didn't continue to give. He says, neither this man sinned nor his parents. The answer to why this man was born blind is because Adam had sinned. Adam introduced sin into the world. Sin alienated us from God. And this physical shortcoming, this blindness, was simply a manifestation of the presence of sin, a spiritual disease that has taken hold of humanity, that manifests itself in all kinds of ways, degeneracy, deformity, functioning at a less than optimal capacity, both spiritually and physically. And so this man's blindness was because of Adam. It's interesting that and I say this in a sense that we all understand all the problems in this world. Sin was introduced into this world when Adam made that decision. That's why I'm saying that the reason why he was born blind is because of Adam. Interesting that this statement was made by the second Adam, the last Adam. So this lesson, this story is a gospel theme. It's not just about the healing of the blind man. It's about the gospel theme. And there's a vital end time message really contained in this particular beautiful story and the experience of this man. The reason why I'm saying it's a gospel theme is because the story of the blind man is really the story of all of us. We are all blind. We come into this world blind, spiritually blinded, spiritually alienated from God as a result of being born into the family of Adam. And Jesus is the last or second Adam, and he's the one who delivers us. He's the one who gives us sight. He's the one that heals us as he healed this blind man. So he healed this blind man, illustrative of the work of the second Adam. He came to redeem, to restore, to fulfill, and to bring back that which Adam had lost. And he lost it for his children as well. So the man is born. The man is healed. The man who was born blind is healed. And he has this interesting encounter. He has this interesting encounter with the Pharisees, with the leaders. They don't like the fact that he's healed on the Sabbath day. They question whether he was actually blind to begin with, because the miracle was so amazing. And they said he couldn't have been born blind. So they bring his parents and they question them. The parents are afraid because they knew they'd get in trouble. So they said, look, he's old enough, ask him. You're familiar with the story. The details are quite amazing. And this exchange that this man has with the Pharisees, with the leaders, is a demonstration that Jesus did not just heal the man's physical blindness, but also the whatever spiritual blindness he might have had. He answered these men and he reasoned with this man with a divine wisdom, showing that he had divine illumination in his mind. This is the healing. This is why I'm saying it's a gospel theme. And it all revolves around a particular issue, which is the real issue in the last days, as we shall see. So I want to remind you of the story as we're going through it, because what's happened to this blind man is what happens to a lot of people today who are enlightened by the truth. When they encounter Jesus and they have their spiritual eyesight open, they see the truth. They take a stand for the truth. They give a testimony for the truth. Many times they encounter trouble. They are at odds with the authority, as far as spiritual authority in the church, with the leaders, spiritual leaders, the pastors, the elders, the presidents. And there's a confrontation. There's a back and forth and arguing and dissent. And no, this wasn't this way. No, this is the truth. We're telling you, listen to us. The man here, he healed me. I was blind. All I know is I was blind. Now I see. And I said, no, tell us again. How did he open his eyes? Your eyes. And this conflict, nothing much has changed. That's why this story is so relevant for us from the perspective of a gospel theme, but also a personal experience that so many people go through when they have their eyes enlightened, open to the truth, to the reality of salvation, of the second Adam, of Christ, the Savior, the Healer, the one who restores eyesight, and this encounter, this confrontation that occurs as a result. So this back and forth with the leaders ends up with the man going into being cast out. Here it is. Let me read it for you. John 9, verse 34 and 35. They answered and said unto him, thou wast altogether born in sins. This is the leader, spiritual leader, Pharisees. Thou wast altogether born in sins. And dost thou teach us? And they cast him out. The equivalent of that today is they disfellowshipped him, right? They kicked him out. He had a board meeting. It was very quick. On the spot, they just kicked him out. They said, well, you're going to teach us? Who do you think you are? We're the ones to tell you. You don't tell us. You were born in sin. You're going to teach us? Get out of here. If you're really born blind, If you claim to be born blind, like and Jesus really healed you, if you're born blind, then you were born in sins. And we weren't born blind, because the Jews understood at the time, believed that, you know, if you're born with some kind of a physical deformity or like blindness, that God is God's wrath is upon you, or that you did some horrible, something, you did something wrong, either you or your parents. That's the question of the disciples, if you recall, was based on this thinking. If you're born blind, if you have some, you're maimed or something is wrong with you, oh, this is a result of sin somewhere. We weren't born like that, that's what they're telling him. So if you're really born blind, you're born in sins, you're going to teach us? So they threw him out, they cast him out. Verse 35, Jesus heard that they cast him out, and when he had found him, he said unto him, dost thou believe on the Son of God? Now, this is where I really want to focus the story here. Jesus finds, hears that this man was cast out, and he finds the man. And when he finds the man was cast out because he took a stand, a testimony for Jesus. He did not back down. He says, he opened my eyes. He's a man of God. I believe that God is with him because he opened my eyes, and it's impossible for a sinner to open a man who was born blind, his eyes. This man is from God. And they didn't like that. The Pharisees didn't like that. So Jesus finds him, and he has been mistreated by the Pharisees. He's been put through this grilling interrogation about a miracle that happened to him, and interrogated and asked again and again and again the same thing. And look, if you experience something like that, you can take comfort in this particular story. If people say, come and tell us, what do you believe? No, tell us again. No, what do you really believe about this thing? What do you believe about Jesus? Did you really say this? No, we're not sure you mean that. Same thing, nothing's changed, right? That's what we're saying. So Jesus hears that this happened to the man. He's cast out. He's thrown out of the synagogue. He's disfellowshipped. He goes and finds him. This is a beautiful, beautiful picture here. Again, this is a gospel theme. Jesus is salvation. By the Pharisees casting the man out of the synagogue, they were essentially saying, you are cut off from God. We are the spiritual leaders. We are the ones who discern. We are the wise. We know better than you. Because of your audacity in trying to tell us what's right and wrong, you're born in sins, we're going to cast you out. Meaning, we're going to cut you off from God. You are cut off from God. You're cut off from salvation. Does that sound familiar? Like something you might have heard or even experienced today? People today are being kicked out of the church. And in being kicked out of the church, the idea, the underlying concept is like they're being cast out of the ark. They're being thrown off the ship of salvation. And the captains and the rulers and the pastors and the deciders of who stays on the ship, who doesn't stay on the ship, is essentially deciding who stays within the bounds of salvation and who is cast off. That's in many people's minds, being cast out of the church or being disfellowshipped is akin to being cast off from salvation. The Jews had this understanding, and this is what happened to this man. So Jesus, who is salvation, finds this man. This is a beautiful, comforting thing about this story. Jesus comes and finds this man. And when he finds this man, he asks him one question, the most important question, the question that really illustrates the real issue in the last days. And the question is this: do you believe on the Son of God? He asks him that in verse 35. Dost thou believe on the Son of God? I find it interesting that Jesus asks this man, of all the questions he could ask him, he just asked him this one question. You see, Jesus found the man. Jesus volunteered the question. It's not that the man asked him or the man was wondering. No, Jesus came. He finds the man. He asks the question. So these are all decisions made on the part of Jesus. So that tells you something of, now Jesus is making the decision of how important the question is. What I mean by that is this. Jesus didn't ask the man, look, you know, I'm so sorry they kicked you out. How did they treat you? How are you feeling now? You know, are you okay? He didn't get into that. The man might have had a hurtful experience, maybe a traumatic experience, how he was treated by the Pharisees. But Jesus doesn't get into that. What does he get into? He gets into the most important issue. He doesn't say, look, you know, it's okay, you'll get back in the synagogue soon. None of it. He doesn't worry about any of that. He asks him the one question that really matters above all else. What is that question? Do you believe on the Son of God? That's the question. That's the real issue, brothers and sisters. You might have been kicked out. You might have been cast off. You might have been ostracized. You might have been disfellowshipped. You might have your reputation tarnished. Presented to people as a sinner. That's what they said to this man. You were altogether born in sins. And you're going to teach us? What do you think they told people? This man, we kicked him out. He was born in sins and claiming this and claiming that. They would have tarnished his reputation. You might experience something like that. The beautiful thing is this. Jesus finds this man outside the synagogue. Outside the denomination, being cast out, disfellowship. Jesus seeks and finds those who are disfellowshipped. And you know what he does? He doesn't say, it's okay, I'll get you back in the church because that's where salvation is. No, salvation is in me. That's what Jesus says. And for you to really be saved, all you need to worry about, all we need to figure out is the answer to this most important question. Not how painful it was that you were kicked out, how traumatic, how do you feel about it, it's okay, I'll comfort you. All that is good. Christ does that. But the real issue, the real question that matters at the end of the day is this question that Jesus asks this man. Do you believe on the Son of God? That's it. If you answer this question, you have the right answer to this question, everything else doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're in, out, kicked out, not kicked out, disfellowshipped, unfellowshipped, refellowshipped, whatever it is. People seek and worry about all these things that don't really matter as much as the real issue. Do you believe on the Son? So what was the man's answer? The man's answer was very clear. Here it is. Verse 36 to 39 of John chapter 9. Continuing. He answered and said, who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him? And Jesus said unto him, thou hast both seen him, and it is he that talketh with thee. And he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. And Jesus said, for judgment I am come into this world, that they which see not might see, and that they which see might be made blind. Here's amazing, amazing response here, answer, and what Jesus said. So the man, evidently, you can see from the story that the man did not see Jesus when Jesus healed him. Because if you remember, the way that Jesus healed him is he sent him away, blind, to the pool of Siloam, and he told him, go wash in the pool of Siloam. And so the man went left. He never laid eyes on Jesus yet. He goes to the pool of Siloam. He washes. He comes seeing, and this encounter with the Pharisees, they kick him out. So now he sees Jesus. And when Jesus asked him this question, he says, Lord, who is he? And it seems like there was a growing realization now in the man's mind that this was his healer. When Jesus tells him, it's me, basically. It says, you have seen him. It is he that talks with you. It's me. And the man would have recognized now, not by sight, but by spiritual sight. This is the interesting thing. His spiritual perceptions were open, and Christ opened his spiritual eyes, not just his physical eyes, and he didn't depend on his physical eyes to identify him as the Son of God. He was new to him as far as the physical eyes were concerned. But with his spiritual eyes, he recognized, he says, well, who is he, Lord? He wanted to believe. When Jesus said, it's me, the man acknowledged that, and it says here that you worship him. Beautiful, absolutely beautiful story. Brothers and sisters, this is a mighty, mighty lesson for us. Jesus finds you wherever you are, cast out, ostracized, reputation tarnished, blackened. And all he asks is, listen, do you believe I'm the Son of God? That's what really matters. Have I opened your spiritual perceptions for you to come to the place where you see, recognize, and believe on the Son of God that it is me? Bow down and worship him like this man does. Acknowledge him, recognize him, and accept him for who he is. Then everything else doesn't matter as much. Now, I'm not trying to minimize or do away with some of the unpleasant experiences that people go through in the encounter and this with the church and being cast out and board meetings and what people say and what people do. That's, for the most part, that's very unpleasant. And for some, it's worse than others. I understand. And there are some horrific stories. But let me tell you something, brothers and sisters. That is nothing compared to what some of us might go through. What really matters at the end of the day is, Do we have the Son? Do we believe on the Son? Do we recognize the Son for who He is? And Jesus' answer here goes on and says, for judgment I am come to this world, that they which see not might see. That's the blind man. He couldn't see, and he came so that he might see. And that they which see might be made blind. Who are they that see? Those who claim that they don't need any help. Those who claim that they already see. That's the spiritual leaders, the Pharisees, who were refusing to acknowledge that Jesus was indeed the Son of God, that He was the sent of God, that He was a divinely ordained messenger, a prophet, a healer. They were not acknowledging any of them. All these things are so because of who He is, being the Son of God. So they claim to have sight. They claim that the man was born in sins and He will teach them. They're the ones who teach. They're the guides. They're the ones whose eyes are open. And Jesus basically says, I have come to heal those who are blind. And those who think that they are not blind, who do not need healing, then they will not benefit from whatever healing I have to offer because they don't feel like they need it. How apt is that for us today with what's happening today? So this is the junction here where we take this story and what happens in it and apply it to what happens in the last days, because the real issue is the same thing. It hasn't changed. You see, Jesus' experience, like we said, Jesus' experience with the blind man, this blind man represents all of us and our experience of how we come to the Savior. Christ opens our eyes. Some of us will go through a traumatic experience with if we go contrary to the norm, to the majority, to family, to members, to whoever it might be. And this has been predicted, like this man's experience was. And the issue that really matters, Jesus says, is if you believe on me as the Son of God. Here's how Jesus puts it in Matthew 10, verse 32. Whosoever therefore shall confess me before men, him will I confess also before my Father which is in heaven. But whosoever shall deny me before men, him will I also deny before my Father which is in heaven. Think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. Amazing words from Jesus. He came to send a sword? What does that mean? There is going to be opposition to the truth that Jesus came to bring. Division. Trauma. Animosity. Confrontation. Much like what happened in the story of this blind man. Jesus came to bring healing to the blind man. Yeah, he bring a sword to the blind man. But the result of the healing, separation happened. Alienation. He was cast out. They threw him out. But Jesus found him that was cast out. And here's the thing that matters. He says, whosoever therefore shall confess me before men, him will I confess also before my Father which is in heaven. The man confessed Jesus. He acknowledged Jesus. He held on to his faith in Jesus. Same thing applies for us today, because what Jesus is saying here is applicable in the last days. What is it about Christ that we confess before men? Christ being who He is, who He said He was, the Son of God, which is the very question that He asked the blind man. Do you believe on the Son of God? Brothers and sisters, this is the destiny deciding question. This is the real issue in the last days. It was the issue in the days of Christ, all the more so in the last days. A lot of people think the issue in the last days is about figuring out, you know, what's happening and knowing what's going to happen when, and the vaccine, everybody's talking about the vaccine and the globalization and what's going on, where are we going to run, where are we going to hide, figure out where we are in prophecy and all this. Let me tell you something right off the bat. The real issue in the last days and being ready in the last days is not knowing all these things. And they have their place. It's good to know them and be informed of them. The real issue is knowing the Son. Now, having said that, what is happening in the last days is outlined in prophecy. And I want to briefly touch on that. But before we go on, here Jesus also gives this warning. So whoever confesses me, Jesus confesses before my Father which is in heaven. But whosoever shall deny me before men, him will I also deny before my Father which is in heaven. Here Jesus shows you what the real issue at play is, especially in the last days. It's all about Jesus Christ. It's not, all these things are the backdrop. They're the context. They're actually secondary. Knowing what will happen when and Sunday law and the issue of deception and what rights do we fight for? Do we refuse taking a vaccine? What about if there is a chip on this? And there's all kinds of talk and there's all kinds of excitement and there's all kinds of even panic when it comes to all these things. And people think, oh, I better make sure I know the latest and greatest information and detail on what will happen so that I can be ready. Here it is. It's all about whether you confess Christ, whether you deny Christ. What is it about Christ that you confess or deny? Well, it's right there in the question that he asked this man. Do you believe on the Son of God? Do you confess that? Do you acknowledge, believe that, and confess that? Do you deny that? That's what matters. And this will bring a rift. When Jesus says, I think not that I came to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. A sword means a rift. This is what will cause a division. There's going to be two sides to this. Those who acknowledge, those who confess, and those who deny. That's really what it is in the last days. Two groups of people. However you want to put it, is going to be two groups of people, and it will all hinge, it will all rotate around the sonship of Christ. You know, in 1 John, we have this interesting verse that links the acknowledgement of the Son with the Father himself. 1 John 2, verses 22 and 23. Who is a liar but he that denies that Jesus is the Christ? He is Antichrist that denies the Father and the Son. Whosoever denies the Son, the same hath not the Father. But he that acknowledges the Son hath the Father also. I want you to think about this verse very carefully. It says this has to do with lying. Who is a liar but he that denieth that Jesus is the Christ? Or in other words, that Jesus is the Messiah. And the word Messiah is synonymous with Son of God. You have to keep that in mind. Because remember when Peter was asked by Jesus, who do you say that I am? And his answer was, thou art the Christ, that is the Messiah, the Son of the living God. That's synonymous, the same thing. To believe in the Messiah is to believe in the Son of God. So to deny that Jesus is the Messiah is to deny that he is the Son of God. It goes together. They stand or fall together. It's two sides of the same coin, so to speak. So this is the spirit of Antichrist, it says here. Denying the Father and the Son. How does one deny the Father and the Son? When you deny that God has a real Son. Now, verse 23 is where I want to introduce a thought here. It says, whosoever denies the Son, the same hath not the Father. There are so many people today who believe that they can have the Father, can have God, be loyal to God, while denying the Son. The Pharisees were a nation like that. And Jesus said, listen, if you don't receive me, you don't receive him that sent me. If you love God, you really love God, that he claims to be worshippers of the true God, then you would love me because I proceeded from him. I'm his son. But by you denying me, you're rejecting God. And this is what John here is talking about. And this is the same thing in the last days, brothers and sisters. Whosoever denieth the Son, because you said earlier, remember the verse we just read in Matthew, whosoever denies me before men, I will deny before my Father. When you deny the Son, that he is the Son, you are denying the Father, that he is a father. Because when you say, no, he's not really a son, God has no son, you're saying God is not a father. The father and son relationship is not real. That's what it means when it says you deny the Son. And then he says, but he that acknowledges the Son hath the Father also. So the key to having the Father is the Son. This is the point here that I wanted to make. The key to having the Father is the Son, acknowledging the Son. That's why the most important question that Jesus could ask this man was, do you believe on the Son of God? Because when you have the Son, you have his Father. By acknowledging that he's a son, or the son, you automatically are acknowledging that there is a father. And when you receive the son, for he is the son, you are receiving also the father. When you, in like manner, you deny the son, you're automatically denying the father. So, the connection with God is all about the sonship of Christ. That is the real issue in the last days. Because guess what? In the last days, there is a message called the three angels' messages, right? We know it as the everlasting gospel in Revelation 14. And this three angels' message is all about worship and fearing God and worshiping him. Coming into a right relation with God. You know how that's possible? Only through the Son. That's what this verse is all about. If you think about the three angels' messages, interesting thing. The first angel's message is the only message of the three that actually tells us to do something. All the other two messages are warnings. The second angel's message is only a warning. Babylon is fallen, just a declaration of something that's happened. Third angel's message warns against receiving the mark of the beast. Now, the mark of the beast has something to do with this Antichrist, has something to do with denying the Son. The mark of the beast is about is what happens to those who reject the first angel's message, which has to do with fearing God, giving glory to him, and worshiping him, because the hour of his judgments come. Failing to follow that injunction ends up with the third angel's message. Well, then you end up receiving the beast, the mark of the beast. You end up receiving the mark of the beast and his image, and the resultant things that are listed there. These are the issues, brothers and sisters, in the last days. You know, I did a full study. I'm not going to get into the details now. Some of you might have seen it, but if you haven't, if you'd like to see it, you can. It's called the SDA Mark of the Beast, where we explore how the end time issue of the Mark of the Beast and what people say, the Sunday law, is not limited to what a lot of people expect and understand. There is more to the issue, and the more has to do with this issue of the Son. That's the real issue. Because in the book of Revelation, it's all about the everlasting gospel. All the details are, like I said, a backdrop or a context. The seven last plagues, and the trumpets, and the close of probation. All these elements in the book of Revelation are the backdrop. They're the timing. They're what's happening around the core issue of, do you have the everlasting gospel or not? Do you have the Father by receiving the Son or not? That's really what matters. You might know all the other information. You might have all the other details. You might be prepared. You think you're prepared. But if you fail on this point, if you fail in answering the question that Jesus asked his blind man, do you believe on the Son of God? Then you're not ready for the last days. That's really simply put. That is the real issue. Do you believe on the Son? The final point I want to make here is in when John says, who is a liar but he that denies that Jesus is the Christ? A liar, if you think about it, in order for a person to be a liar, they need to know the truth. Think about that. A liar is someone who knows the truth and then denies the truth or says the opposite to the truth. You might have wrong information that you believe. If you believe it to be true, then you're not, even though you might repeat a lie, but you're not a liar in that you're not intentionally lying. A liar, like Satan. Satan is a murderer, a liar, and a murderer from the beginning. He's the father of lies. The reason why Satan is a liar is because he knows the truth and he is denying it. So a liar from the foundation there, from Satan, is to know the truth and to deny it. The spirit of Antichrist is the spirit of Satan. And those who are actuated and motivated by the same spirit, it means just like the Pharisees, they see the truth, they refuse to acknowledge it, they deny it. They are liars. Beware of that. These are the real issues at play in the last days. As we go into the last days, this is the prep ground, what's happening now. All these issues relating to the Son and how people relate to the Son. This is the preparation for entering into the last days. We're entering the last days, that's it. You know, it's like put your seatbelts on, that's it. Whoever put it this way or whoever didn't put it, you're going to end up wherever you end up depending on how you prep now. The prep for the last days, going in, is not figuring out every detail of what will happen when and where and be ready, is to have the Son. That's the real prep. That's the real issue. If you have the Son, you're set. There is no need to worry about anything else. Now, having said that, like I said, then we can go into some of the details of, okay, what's happening? There is growing tendency in the world today to see the net tightening when it comes to regulations, when it comes to all these restrictions that are happening around us because of the virus and then the vaccine and God knows what will happen then and all of these things. We're seeing this, and we're seeing this in the fulfillment of prophecy that we are indeed nearing the end. That's all the more reason to make sure, not that we know all the details about that even more, no, to make sure that we are ready now, we have our seatbelt, so to speak, on. That is, we have the Son. Brothers and sisters, we have to have that prep before the trouble hits. There's a time of trouble coming such as never was. These are end time events. What's happening? This is what Jesus prophesied will happen to his people in the last days. To a large degree, the prophecy that talks about what will happen in the last days in the book of Revelation is what will happen to those who do not believe, if you think about it. To those who believe, they have Christ. No trouble befalls them. No issue. They don't face plagues and turmoil. They face difficulty and challenges, yes, but nothing touches them. You know, the Psalm tells us, 1,000 shall fall on the side, 10,000 on the right hand, nothing shall touch thee. So how does a person get to be there where nothing touches them if they have the Son? So like I said, I want to encourage you with these thoughts. Keep looking up. Stay strong in the Lord. Stay strong in Jesus. Above all else, love those who hate you. Those who despise you, those who despitefully use you and abuse you, pray for them. Because guess what? That's practice for what's coming. We're going to go through a more severe trial, a much hotter fire in the last days, a time of trouble such as never was. Let's hold on to the Son steadfastly unto the end. Father in heaven, we are so thankful for this opportunity to study your word together, to be reminded of these lessons, Lord, that it all comes down to this one question that Jesus asked the blind man, do you believe on the Son of God? Lord, I pray that you will strengthen our faith, help us not just to believe, but to understand that what that really means practically, and that we might use the time wisely now, in the remaining hours of Earth's history, to share Jesus with others in a way that they also might be ready for that which will befall this world. We thank you for this time, for this season. We ask it in Jesus' name and for his sake. Amen.
I pray you were blessed by this video. Be sure to subscribe to our channel, like, turn notifications on, and most importantly, share this video with others. May God the Father richly bless you in Jesus.